This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast, where we embrace the human side of technology. My name is Josue Cardona, and I am your host for this episode. Usually I'm joined by Kelly Dunlap, but she's not here today. Instead, we have a conversation that I recorded with my good friend and colleague and a friend of the show, Dr. Ali Mattu. And so here's what happened. Me and Ali went and watched Star Trek Beyond together on opening night. Then we went to a diner and recorded a podcast for a show called Geek Therapy, which I also host. And there we went into full spoilers of the movie, and we talked about what Star Trek means to us. We speculated about the next installment, and it was great. Then we recorded this conversation for Psych Tech, where there are no spoilers for the movie, and instead we talk about the technology in Star Trek, specifically its role in creating the utopian future that is represented in all of Star Trek. So what you're going to hear now is an unedited conversation between me and Ali at a diner. If you're interested in more about Star Trek from me and Ali and a few other people, we will be at Star Trek Mission in New York on the weekend of September 2nd through the 4th. And on that Friday, September 2nd at 6 p.m., we have a panel called The Evolution of Star Trek's Fandom. So if you're in New York or you're coming out for Star Trek Mission, first of all, contact us, let us know. And second of all, definitely come to our panel. Kelly will be back next week, but for now, here's my conversation with Ali. So we are at a diner. We're having coffee still. And this is a kind of a second part of a Geek Therapy episode, right? Where we talked about Star Trek Beyond. We just saw the movie a few hours ago.
We just saw it.
And that is the voice of Ali Mattu. And Psych Tech listeners who have been paying attention will know the name Ali, which... So I've never told you this before, Ali, yeah. But Kelly has mentioned you on the podcast multiple times. And I believe, maybe, I may have even edited out.
What?
Because I thought, at the time...
You edited... The mention, invoking of me out.
Yes, just because it seemed like an inside joke. Like, okay. I know who Ali is, and she knows who Ali is, but nobody else knows because there was no context for it. Now, I promise that whenever you're mentioned from now on, I will leave it in.
Well, to return the favor, I'm going to have to evoke Kelly's name periodically throughout this episode.
You can.
So I'll do that. But thank you, Kelly, for being so nice and welcoming, even when I'm not here.
Also, she's going to hate this because she's a huge Trekkie.
Well, she's here in spirit. And yeah. You know, I am a long-time listener, first-time participant. So thanks for bringing me on the podcast.
Now, the reason why I wanted to have this conversation with you is because you, again, huge Trekkie. You are...
Big Trekkie.
You are the biggest Star Trek fan I know.
I like to trek out with my starship out.
Yeah. Oh, my. And a few episodes ago, on episode 67 of Psych Tech, we had a conversation about robots taking over, essentially. That's the general idea.
Judgment Day.
Sort of, right? We talked a lot about different scenarios.
Yeah.
WALL-E, for example, right?
WALL-E.
So what happens when computers are, or when we can automate everything, you know, when technology comes in and really, really changes or essentially eliminates the need for people?
Yeah.
So we got into this talk about whether it would be a utopia or what would happen if it was good for people, kind of. And it went into a very interesting way, but it really had to do with automation. And I kind of wanted to expand that conversation. Here on Psych Tech, we were born out of sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
The whole reason why this show exists is because Kelly saw an episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And she had to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And also, we've done an episode on each episode of Black Mirror. Because it's
as
fantastic.
As we should. As everyone should.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to start a podcast after watching Dark Mirror because you need to get that stuff out of your head.
No, it is.
You cannot go to sleep.
You need to debrief. Yeah. No, it is rough. So So we haven't done sci-fi in a while. So we just saw Star Trek Beyond. We loved it. And for our opinions on the movie, I will link to the Geek Therapy episode where we talked about that. But I kind of, you know, the question I wanted to present to you is, and put it into context for us, right? Because because in Star Trek Beyond, they do talk about...
And we should clear up. Are we doing spoilers in Star Trek Beyond here or not? I think we should venture in the no category.
Yes, yeah, that's fine. That's
we don't
fine.
Really
I'm
need
okay.
to.
We don't, no, it does, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is not really spoilery. It's that you do see that the future in Star Trek is a peaceful future,
it's
right?
It's bright.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if you could call it a utopia, but it is utopian, mm-hmm. right? In the sense that...
It's pretty darn close.
It's pretty great, right? And so I want you to explain what that future looks like, mm-hmm. the fact that there's no currency and things like that, right?
Sure.
In just really quick, because that's not shown in the reboot movies. It's not shown in Star Trek 2009. It doesn't come up in Into Darkness. And this is the first time we see it in this new version of the universe. And I'm sure we'll see it in the CBS series coming up, but it's part of Gene Roddenberry's world.
Yeah.
You know? So what is that future like? And then we'll follow that up with a conversation about how did... Getting to that point in time where technology is so advanced, how much of that technology really influenced that future? That
what role did the technology play in the utopia?
Yeah.
Well, as a scholar of Star Trek, as a self-described scholar of Star Trek.
Yes, Dr. Matu, please. Enlighten us.
Yeah, I think the what makes Star Trek comes down to three things, and that is humanity has overcome prejudice among ourselves. Humanity has then united in global cooperation, what we say in psychology as these superordinate goals, these goals that we cannot achieve individually. And then the magic sauce there is, or the secret sauce, I should say, is humanity also finds a way to develop empathy for aliens. That is the ultimate vision, I think, that unites all of Star Trek. No matter what version you're looking at, humanity has improved, it's working together, and it's working collaboratively with other species. It's this idea that we're going to get better. The economics, I don't think, are really a big deal, and there's wishy-washy stuff there. But I do think that this is the core ingredient, and this is also this utopian future of us working together. In the Star Trek story, was born out of a dystopia. In the 21st century, there is a World War III. There is a eugenics war. And depending on which version of the canon you're looking at, it depends on if it happens in the 90s or later on in the 2000s. But regardless, humanity almost wipes itself out. And in the midst of that global destruction, first contact happens. Humanity meets the Vulcans and realizes they're not alone in the universe, and that is what leads to this global cooperation. I've done this Nerd Night talk, and I've done this blog post where I sort of explore all of this, and that empathy for aliens part is really, really hard to do for many, many different reasons, but that's where technology can play a role. I think when it comes to the utopian vision of Star Trek, we can achieve a lot of those things on the small scale. We can overcome prejudice. We can unite under large goals. We've done that before. World War II is a good example of that. The United States of America, how it was born, we united under a large superordinate goal. We overcame our individual prejudices, and here we are, United States is still around. But that empathy for aliens part, it's going to be incredibly hard to do without some form of technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, to me, I think right now, where we are, you know, not everybody in the world has internet access, right?
No.
And when we're connected through the internet, right, the internet is the first thing that really allowed us to connect immediately, right? I can talk to whoever I want, but you have to be connected. So mm-hmm. right now, there's a lot of talk in tech circles about what happens when that next billion people goes online.
And they're about to come online in the next few years.
Yeah, I mean, the $4 smartphone is out in India, right? Yeah. So those are game changers, and so many people are going to be online.
People are going to be leapfrogging over personal computers or laptop computers to smartphones. People who have never owned
Immediately,
any type of computing device are now going to... What's going to happen when these individuals have access and are connected to the internet?
Yeah, and Google and Facebook are working on free Wi-Fi for everybody, you know, free internet access. So if in the very near future, we'll be very close to everybody being connected. And that's at our scale right now, you know, unless first contact happens, I think, you know, this is our version of at least gaining empathy, you know, with other people.
I think there's a few things that are happening here. And to spoil the nerd night talk I've done on this a little bit, what brings people to... There's a few things that help us to overcome prejudice. Contact with other people, developing knowledge about other people, and that leading to empathy for other people. We're a species that worked in sort of small groups, and we are very distrustful of other groups. This in-group, out-group bias. We always like our groups better than other groups. We can overcome that, but to have this large-scale global cooperation, we need to focus on some type of goal that we can't achieve individually. And I think the big crisis of our time, the big thing that will unite us, is our changing planet and the climate change. That's not a goal that America can solve by itself, that India can solve by itself, that China or Brazil. It takes global cooperation. And if we don't work together to overcome this conflict, we're kind of all screwed. So I think that will be a force, a pressure that will lead us to see some of the Star Trek cooperation that we see with the Federation.
This week in the news, Google shared that they had their DeepMind AI, mm-hmm. and they applied it to some of their servers, mm-hmm. just on the cooling aspect. And by applying that AI to reduce cooling costs, it reduced it by 40%, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that is huge, because we can do this, right? Yeah. We can reduce at least that part of it, which is reducing emissions, optimizing our energy usage. You know, I mean, that's one part of this huge battle that we have ahead of us, and it's happening, right? Yeah. The big companies are applying it to that,
yeah,
and I mean, there's millions of examples, but that's like one that just came up so recently. And you know, when we talk about AI and it helping with so many different things, I don't think on the show we've ever addressed climate change in particular.
Yeah.
And that was really exciting news. So, we're getting there.
It's a real interesting time where, you mentioned what's going to happen when all of these people come online. And one of the beautiful things about Star Trek is its instant subspace communication, where anyone can basically talk to anyone within subspace range. It doesn't matter what language either. You have these universal translators. One of our challenges right now, no matter where you are in the world or where I am, we can pretty much get in contact with each other. Now, if you're on Everest, you need a satellite phone and all of that kind of stuff, but we can still get in contact with each other. But the way that technology is unfolding right now, it hasn't caught up with the software in our head. You know, you and I right now, we're recording this podcast, we're looking at each other in the eyes, and it's eye contact that humanizes. And right now we're having a hard time with most forms of internet communication of building in the humanity into our internet communication. That's one of the reasons why people say such heinous things online. It's not the anonymity that loosens people up of the internet. It's a lack of eye contact. So how do we create technologies that are going to weave in the humanity? Something you see in Star Trek is the view screen, but something you see in Deep Space Nine is they have this holographic projector, right, where it's like the person's right there in front of you. So I think we're in this weird interim where some Star Trek technologies have come to light, some haven't, and we're having a hard time figuring out what's the most humanistic way to build these technologies that help us to really work together.
Yeah, yeah. I think, do you think about virtual reality in that sense?
Yeah.
About it being, yeah, yeah. So, because once we, it's weird, you know? Have you ever used a VR headset?
So I used the Oculus Rift, like, circa 2012.
Gotcha, so yeah, yeah, yeah. I've used the first development kit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the refresh rate wasn't that great. I haven't used the Gear VR. I haven't used any of the VR headsets that came out this year, besides Google Cardboard.
That does not count. See, but it does, because there are organizations that are creating what's commonly called VR experiences with the goal of introducing some sort of empathy into the story that they're trying to tell. So something like, I know Charity Water has this experience where you can go through and then you are seeing a community get clean water for the first time, and the way the camera is situated, you're not watching everybody, you're there with them.
Wow.
And you can look over to the side and there's a little girl who's like cheering and jumping up and down and looking at you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's very different than just seeing something on a screen. Now there's a sense of presence and you're there and you can understand that group of people way better than you could before. But in terms of two people sitting in front of each other in a virtual space, I do think it's better than having no sort of interaction. You can't really look into your eyes yet, you know? There's a lot going on there for something like that to happen. But there is more, you know, you can have an avatar. You could have some sort of presence. And then if we're both sharing a space, like if right now we're sitting at a diner, in real life, but we could be in a virtual diner, right, from two completely different places, and I think it is a completely different experience than just having a comment on a board.
I think we're moving in the right direction. If you look at a platform such as Snapchat, which you and I both started playing with around the same time when it had its big update and they added all these new features, we started trying
stickers.
It out. Stickers. Oh my gosh. I love that little, like, is it a penguin or something? And it goes, what?
It defies, I love that sticker. Definition. Yeah.
Or it's a polar, or not a polar bear, some kind of bear. I don't know what it is. But one of the things I like about Snapchat is it feels like such a mobile-first platform, and it feels like such an intimate connection with this other person. It is completely video-based or photo-based, mm-hmm. but mostly video-based. Once I think we get, and similar with YouTube, some of the most compelling people on YouTube, they are their raw, authentic selves in the place where they live, and you feel like you're getting a connection with this other person more than we've had in the past. As we get better bandwidth, as there's more access, and I really think what's limiting us is battery life. As there are some really big innovations in battery and what we can do, and how we can do more video and more, we can squeeze in more processing power into these smartphones, I think we'll be able to have more of that kind of stuff. The thing with VR right now is it's so, the specs you need to be able to run that stuff, it's pretty intense. Mm-hmm. But that'll come down.
Yeah.
And as that comes down, the ability for you and I to record this podcast in VR and as if we're sitting next to each other will open up really interesting possibilities for humans to connect with other humans in the way that we have for thousands of years. And that is exciting. The fact that technology will catch up to allow us to do virtually what you and I have been doing, what you and I and our ancestors have been doing for thousands and thousands of years. That really excites me.
There's, you know, Kelly and I have never recorded an episode in person.
Yeah.
Every single episode has been virtual, but it's live. It's, you know, it's synchronized, where we're talking to each other, right? Even though we can't see each other. And then the way we do it is we don't use video conferencing because we don't want to lose the quality.
Yeah, I know. And
I mean, you know, I record like in my bathroom and like I'm looking inside a box. Like it's pretty funny. And I think about this all the time.
The glamorous life of a podcaster.
Yes. And I think I think about this a lot in terms of, you know, I when I work with clients long distance, I'm using a screen and there's a camera and we're looking at each other, right? And there's still a connection there because again, the view screen, right?
Yep.
And I think about YouTube, and the thing I like about YouTube is that there is that like somebody's looking at me.
Yeah.
Somebody's talking at me. And for a while, I thought, I got really excited about the idea that that was somehow better than audio. But then I went back and forth and I thought about it. And I think there is something incredibly like intimate, right? About having somebody in your head, essentially,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
For a long period of time. It's just a very different experience. So I stopped thinking about it in terms of better or worse. I think it's very different.
They're different. And that's how I feel mm-hmm. about VR
yeah.
versus movies.
Yeah.
One isn't going to be a better, more immersive kind of thing. It's going to just be different.
But in terms of empathy, of increasing empathy with other people, I think that's where now you're in it.
Maybe,
right? Because
maybe, but
there isn't a set perspective.
It's a new medium, and I think the problem, which whenever we have transitions to new mediums, is people aren't really sure how to tell those stories. So right now we know how to edit and control your attention on a 2D film or 3D mm-hmm. film. With a VR experience, how do you tell a story when the active agent in that story can control and where they are in an environment? That's a different kind of way of storytelling.
Did you see anything regarding VR at VidCon? Did you see any of those panels?
Yeah. People were they had a few panels about how do you tell a story, and there's more 3D video,
360 video,
because
of YouTube, yeah,
because of YouTube and Facebook. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that, and there was a lot of discussion of, well, how do we do these videos? How do we do it in a way it's where it's not just, it's a normal video and you can look behind and see behind the scenes?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting story that's unfolding. So I think these technologies are going to help us to connect human to human. The thing about Star Trek is human to alien. And this is the challenge here is, you know, in Star Trek, they don't have a ton of money, and so the aliens kind of look like us. And I think the reason why First Contact works in Star Trek is because Vulcans look a lot like us, and somehow they speak English. The challenge for us, if and when, and I hope I live to see when, we do encounter alien life, the chances they'd look anything like us are next to nothing. They could look incredibly different. They could be non-mammal based. They could look like something that lives in the deep in the ocean sea. They could look more like an insect-based life form. They could be a non-carbon-based life form. They could be, you know, who knows? So will we see them as us? Like, we don't see cockroaches as us. We've evolved to not really have much empathy for things that don't look like us. And then to be able to communicate with an alien life form. How are we going to do that? That's where my favorite example of First Contact, I hated it as a kid. I thought it was a horrible example, but I love it as an adult, is the movie Contact.
Contact. Yeah, Jodie Foster.
Because these aliens understand human psychology, and they know, hey, humans have a pretty hard time of having empathy for each other, let alone aliens. So why don't we have first contact in a form they can understand, which is themselves? And it's beautiful.
Or your father.
Or
specifically.
Your father.
Specifically your father. Yeah.
And, you know, they are using some amazing technology,
yeah.
right, to create that experience. So I think if there is going to be first contact, it's either going to go from some way of using math as a language to communicate, from some way of using maybe VR of how we project ourselves to these other aliens or how they project themselves to us. It's not going to be like this, and we don't have a universal translator. So that's a challenge.
So, I mean, we're getting way better at translating language and doing it almost immediately. Even again, the technology to just
Google Translate,
not just Google Translate, but also to recognize, you know, voice recognition.
Sure.
And to be able to, I mean, that's the hardest part. Mm-hmm. Right? So what if first contact is with a species that has some sort of inaudible frequency? Then, you know, how are we going to do that?
But they're a hive,
or just another, you know, frequency that we couldn't possibly hear with our bare ears. And so right now we do have, we all speak, right? And or we write it down, and the technology is like really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. Still, every single time I play around with some sort of anything that does automatic translation.
The real-time app-based translation
is
like
incredible.
It is like Star Trek. It's like magic. It is a universal translator.
Yeah, and you can do it while you're speaking. It's translating, and it's actually coming up in a voice, like that type of thing. And then if you train it, I mean, some of those voice recognizing softwares are very iffy, but once you start training them, they're incredible.
Yep.
So that's very impressive. That's something that is here. That is something that I think makes it a lot easier. There's still the cultural aspect, right? The cultural context. The things that you can't translate, I mean...
Which Star Trek doesn't do well.
Mm-hmm.
So Star Trek Beyond, I think, does it well. The without giving anything away, the whole first scene is a cultural conflict. And you can have...
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You can have a universal translator that translates language, but that's different than interpreting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different than interpreting culture, too, and responding to cultural differences. What is verbal as well as what's nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another aspect of something humans have a struggle with and something Star Trek doesn't show us very well. And one of the problems with Star Trek is all the Klingons have the same culture. You know, all the Romulans have the same culture.
So one thing that is also very limited in... Right, so Star Trek is very old, right? We're celebrating the 50th year, right?
Yep.
50th anniversary of Star Trek. And there are things that are really funny, like the communicators that are kind of like a flip phone, right, in the
mm-hmm.
original series.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea kind of continues because you couldn't even imagine that we would, the kind of technology that we'd be using now to communicate, right?
Which, you know, the Motorola StarTech.
Yeah.
Which was based essentially on the Star Trek communicator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so we have now things that Gene Roddenberry couldn't even imagine, right? And
of course.
And you know, a lot of old sci-fi, there's just no way to imagine that sort of thing. And it wasn't until I learned about affective computing, which is, you know, computers being able to read emotions and facial expressions.
And it put me out of a job.
Yeah, and then be able to... So, actually, that's a whole other conversation about AIs being able to diagnose and reading signs that are... they're just almost impossible for us to recognize, right? So, I think... That with actually, I'm completely confident that with over time and with training, right, you can take an AI and it can learn cultural context and it can actually get to a point where it's very, very good. Like the fact that Uhura knows so many languages,
it's actually amazing.
It's almost unbelievable. But if you think about maybe she has help, right? Like maybe that communicator on her ear that she wears on the bridge is like a special communications officer version, right? That's actually helping her, you know, in some way. And I don't know, you know, you can augment that experience. So those are things that I think are believable and that are possible in terms of communication.
Just to give you my humanistic view of this, there's this idea about Star Trek that I actually really like that comes from the 2000, not the 2009, but the Star Trek The Next Generation. I think the episode is called The Chase. And it sort of explains why all the aliens look kind of similar to each other.
Hmm.
And it's basically there was this old ancient race, and they sort of spread out their genes across the whole the galaxy, and or at least the Alpha Quadrant. And so all these aliens are distant relatives of each other. And the way I sort of think about this is maybe the forces of evolution provide a consistent pathway for life to develop on different worlds. If there is this Goldilocks region that Earth exists in, where water and oxygen and all that kind of stuff is the right balance, and if there are other planets and other systems in a Goldilocks region as well with similar stars like our own, then maybe the forces of nature will evolve life that is in some way similar to us. So maybe Uhura actually has gone through Starfleet and has developed an understanding of the basic ways in which language emerges in different parts of the galaxy. Maybe there's a lot of similarities. It's kind of like in human language where, I say human language as if there's like non-human language, in human language, there's relationships between different languages and different similarities. Even if you don't speak that language, you might understand some similarities there.
Kind of like we figure out the secret to language, like the secret base code.
Like the Magna Carta, the Magna Carta, but what was it called? The Rosetta Stone.
Yeah.
We figure out the Rosetta Stone. Here's where Star Trek is really interesting. Its hits are hits. Mm-hmm. And when it misses technology, it misses it so much. Like, okay, look, the warp drive is something that is a possible way of beating the light speed limitations of physics, right? That we're not actually traveling faster than light, we're just warping space. It's something NASA's actually looking at. Fantastic. Nicely done, Star Trek. But then when it comes to AI, what the heck, Star Trek? So AI is done so incredibly poorly mm-hmm. in Star Trek. We have a computer that maybe it's self-aware, maybe it's not, I don't know. In one episode of the animated series, it seems to be. And you have Data, which is the only android in the Alpha Quadrant. That makes no sense to me. Essentially, in Star Trek, the singularity has kind of happened and it hasn't changed anything at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, again, it's the same thing as with the affective computing and AI. Those are things that are so hard. Those things are happening right now. Like, I've played with IBM Watson.
And
it's still hard to wrap my head around where we are now, especially where we were, you know, comparing it to where we were just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible, you know, and I don't blame Star Trek for,
you know,
for not being better at predicting the future.
Did you do an episode on the Christmas special episode of Black Mirror?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of
so course. This episode is really about the singularity. Mm-hmm. The singularity has occurred, and won't spoil it for those of you who haven't listened to it. But it does it hits on all the issues that really come up of how will humans relate to AI. How will humans relate to these, what Martine Rothbent calls these mind clones of ourselves? Mm-hmm. If you can replicate yourself as AI, what does that mean? What laws and what rights do they have? How do we determine what psychologists call objective self-awareness? Knowing that you are alive is sort of the definition of being sentient. So how will we define that with AI when AI gets really close to appearing alive? Mm-hmm. Like, will we know if they're actually alive and actually self-aware? We don't know. Those questions Star Trek neglects, and other sci-fis picked up the slack, like Black Mirror.
Yeah.
And then there's other things that Star Trek also misses. Like, we mentioned warp drive. It nails the head right there, right? Or hits a nail on the head. Except it also doesn't.
On the theoretical head.
Well, on the theoretical head. But the psychological edge, it doesn't. We're breaking a lot of rules, or we're bending rules of relativity, and people are warping away to the 5-year mission on the Enterprise, and you're coming back, and there's been time displacement. Mm-hmm. People, you have aged. You're Captain Kirk on the Enterprise. You've aged differently than your mom, played by Winona Ryder, on Earth. Mm-hmm. Star Trek doesn't really deal with that issue of mm-hmm. what would be the real psychological consequence of people traveling in space and aging in different ways because they're traveling faster in time. Interstellar does that.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good examples of that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of my favorite ones is it's an anime called something Distant Stars. Damn it, I forgot what it's called. But it's about these two friends who one of them goes off essentially to the space military, and as they're flying away, I mean, they text each other, you know, and every time it takes longer and longer for the text to go back, and I mean, and they're aging at different rates, and it's incredible.
Well, and the other thing that I think some Star Trek has done better than others is the psychological effects of transporters. So this is something that
good. I want to get into transportation because I think that's a big.
It's a big
thing, yeah.
All right, well,
and it's what, because how do we get to that version of it, right? Or how does that technology affect the world, right? And then...
So the transportation technology is a big part of all of this because transportation relates to what's going on with humans and life, but it's also related to replicators and what would mm-hmm. happen if scarcity in society is basically eliminated. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Okay. So, all right, there's a Heisenberg compensator. It gets around the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which basically prevents transportation from happening, right? There's that. But let's just, like, put that on the side for a moment. And let's just say we have the ability to transport from one place to another. Now, Josue, and I wish Kelly was here because I'd love to ask Kelly this question too, but do you think that when a person is transported from point A to point B, they are the same person on point B? Or do you think we're scanning, destroying a person, and recreating a copy of that person at point B?
So those are the two kind of theories, right, about how it could happen. I mean, I don't know. I've thought about it. I think we did do a transportation episode where we talked about this. And so where do you fall on it?
I fall into the camp of thinking about those things gives me a lot of terror dreams about what's been happening in all these episodes of Star Trek. It's
Spaceballs. Doesn't work in Spaceballs.
I mean, there's so many episodes of Star Trek where something bad has happened with the transporters.
Yeah.
And you essentially get the idea that this person is scanned, they're dematerialized, they're kept in the computer banks, and that's a ton of data.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're basically recreated somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think these people are being destroyed. If you look at there's a Next Generation episode where Riker, we find another version of Riker because he was beamed up like 20 years ago, but half of the beam got reflected back down, and so he beamed up to the ship, but he also beamed back down too, so there's been two versions. Stuff like that would really mess with your mind.
Yep.
Like, are you a duplicate? What is consciousness? What, like, how do we understand these things?
Yep.
What if there's a duplicate of you? If we transport you, there's an error, and now there's two Josues. Who's the real Josue?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and so that's a whole episode, right? But I'm gonna take a sharp turn here,
okay,
right? And try to refocus the transporter conversation in terms of, let's forget about how it happens and all of the philosophy about what could,
sure,
possibly happen. But what effect does it have once you can do that? Because we just talked about having virtual experience, but why wouldn't I just beam over to where you are, record the episode, and then beam back home, right? All of the potential hazards aside, right? I mean, and you could make the argument that the same thing is possible for any transportation, right?
Sure. And you got to put aside to the resource question, because Star Trek never really answers how much does it...
Energy consumption.
How much energy is actually used. Yeah. I mean, it's
zero sum. It's
I mean, it uses a vast amount of hard disk space on those isolinear chips, or if you're on Voyager, the bioneural gel packs that always get infected for some reason. But yeah, okay, so how would it change society if where you are on the planet doesn't really matter? You could live in Paris but work in Hawaii.
Yeah, like imagine just completely eliminating your commute right now. You know, like, oh, that's a couple extra hours for me every day.
Well, how would...
Your clients would never be late.
You know, the
maybe.
Way...
They'll still be late. The ones that are going to be late are going to be late regardless. But,
well, and maybe their clinician will be late too.
No.
Well, that would have a huge impact on how society is structured. So what we've seen over the 20th century is a shift from more of an agrarian-based culture in America to a bit more of an urban culture. And then we saw a shift to suburban, and now we're seeing a little bit of shift back to urban in some areas. It would change completely where or how we structure society, because it wouldn't matter where you would live. And now also, if we have replicator technology and scarcity to some degree has been eliminated, and we're not worrying about food and hunger and access to water and resources.
How do replicators work? How do they make...
They work similarly to transporters, and they just basically, since we can manipulate matter, we can just materialize whatever we want. Again, they don't explain
what are they,
how
exactly the
material. Resources, yeah, yeah, what's okay. the raw material here? It's just, it's kind of scarce, but not really.
It's cool, Star Trek. It's all right. You don't have to. You don't have to answer the question.
I'm trying to think of if we have had a real parallel to that. I think on a small scale we've had. So you can live in certain communities where it doesn't really matter where you live, and you can still get to work, and you have everything's nearby, but not to a large scale.
No.
I mean, okay, so one way it's we've seen this is with being able to fly and that transportation, and having the opportunity to live in one continent and work in another for the week. Jet lag is a modern problem that didn't impact our ancestors. So this would do a number on your circadian rhythms and your sleep-wake cycles.
But that also, yeah, but it also affects, like, oh, well, yeah, I see. Because, like, right now, something like jet lag affects a very small percentage of people, right? And yeah, if suddenly you could just transport wherever, yeah, that would affect people a lot.
Or so, not. Or you not. Would just beam back.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, you just have artificial light at the office. So this is what I wanted to get at. I firmly believe that work, right, the way we do work today, and I'm talking more about in the Western world, right, is office work, you know, white collar work, that kind of thing, is anxiety inducing and depression inducing, right, and it's stressful and it's unhealthy, you know, and all of a sudden you're not limited by how far you can commute or where your family lives, and all of these opportunities open up, and I think about the effects of how positive on just people's health it would be to be less limited in that sense.
Yeah,
you know,
you know what I think about with that, with Star Trek, is what becomes important, the skills that become important, completely change in the Star Trek universe. So there's this wonderful episode in the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation where Picard talks about how he's a bad speller. And the reason why he's a bad speller, if you think about it, voice recognition is the way things work. And he hasn't had to write down with his hand much at all.
I think Jake Sisko is the first person I ever saw write down with pen and paper. Yeah.
And right now, what we're seeing is access to data given.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, I didn't even see that.
Just split half and half?
Yeah, let's split it.
What, are they closing?
I guess.
Oh,
yeah.
We're right in the middle, huh?
What time do you close?
Right now.
Oh, okay. Well, finish your thought. What was your
So right now, access to data is changing what we memorize. So we don't memorize facts. If we can Google them, we don't memorize facts. What's becoming more important in society is the ability to critically think through information, being able to connect with other people, collaborate. Those are the skills that are becoming more important now in the 21st century. It's not like having to memorize information as it was in the past.
Yeah, it's like right now the important thing is to learn what questions to ask Google.
Yeah.
Right? Because Google will take care of the rest.
And how to think through all the vast results you get from Google.
Yes. Yeah, how to interpret them, yeah.
How to interpret them.
How to select. Yeah, well, we're getting kicked out of this diner, so we need to stop. Yeah.
So
we can continue this someday at another day, right?
Another
diner?
Yeah, man.
Or do you want to continue this now?
So much stuff was away. I've got notes on the holodeck, on medicine and the extension of life and how you'd have new phases of life as life is extended. And we're beginning to see that now with baby boomers.
Yeah, absolutely.
We didn't even talk about augmented technology. but with the baby boomers, we're seeing that right now, where we are seeing that life is has extended and now... Josue, there's so much more to talk about with this.
But we're getting kicked out of the diner because it's midnight.
So... I'd love to hear from the PsychTech audience about your questions about Star Trek and technology and culture and psychology and how everything's changing and what Star Trek gets right and what it doesn't get right. So let's continue the conversation on social media.
Quick, they're throwing us out. How can people get in touch with you?
At Olimatu on Twitter is my name. You can also find me on YouTube at The Psych Show, and I'd love to connect and communicate with you all right there.
So as you can hear, we got kicked out of the diner. It was pretty late. There was a lot more we wanted to talk about, so I've already talked to Ali. He's agreed to definitely come back on the show in the future and complete this conversation. Hopefully we can do it closer to the event I mentioned earlier. Again, that's Star Trek Mission New York. It's in New York City, September 2nd through 4th. It's a big celebration. It's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. We'll both be on a panel on September 2nd at 6 p.m. Ali shared his contact info at the end, so please reach out to him if you have any thoughts on Star Trek or just want to check out more cool psychology content. And for more PsychTech, visit PsychTechPodcast.com or reach us on Twitter at PsychTechCast. And Kelly will definitely be on the next episode. Until next time.